There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Southern Sports Today proudly presents The Chuck Oliver Show. It's an inside look at everything college football. Now live from Atlanta, Georgia, it's time to talk college football with the reigning king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
There's a truth. Not one college football head coach can even whisper. But it is true. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. How are y'all? I'm great, and in large part, like pie graph, why is Chuck so great today? This show and the fact that it exists, and I keep my lights on and food in the cabinet because of college football, so I appreciate everybody making that possible, so that's all of y'all. So, it's a Friday. We're talking college football. And I said, there's a truth. Folks, I promise you, not one college football head coach, even assistant coaches, can't even whisper. But it is true. Now, here is the alternate title. Chuck will take up the cause of making life easier for a bunch of dudes with million-dollar salaries who we're all already jealous of. All right, that's the alternate title. See, I thought that was a bit wordy. And, like, probably didn't maybe give me an open-minded audience. Wait a minute. He's going to argue in favor of the black hat? No. I'm going to argue in favor of your football coach in one specific way. Because he can't do it. He cannot do this, so I will take up the cause. Do you know what that truth is? You can be extremely well paid and overworked. You can be. Now, when we're talking, because there are so many people, I'm overworked, okay? That's a lot of us. I was reading an article over the weekend, and I acknowledge that this is an article that needed to be written. It has an audience, I bet you. It was about the assault of consumers when it comes to tipping. I was getting a bag of food out of a drive-thru last week. That they turned that little screen around and it had, do you want to tip 10%, 15%? I'm like, you handed me a bag of food like it was a cheeseburger. And it was about how that has become standard and it's companies saying, well, throw in for the workers so we don't have to. And there was a quote in there about, I'm overworked. I need to be paid more. And I was like, all right, but let me break this down. That person who works in the food service industry, yes, that overworked. Yep, that's true. I need to make more. Well, to cover your bills, you probably do. Sure. So, boom. In addition to retirement fund and whatever else. So that is like the first step of, I'm overworked because you're not even well paid yet. I know a female acquaintance of mine who's an attorney. Her words, quote, I'm a well-paid slave. Do you know what one of her assignments was one time? There's a company, maybe this is not unusual, but for her, she's a document specialist looking for commas and dashes and, you know, two spaces instead of one. They gave her like 12,000 emails and said, go through these and see if there's any reference to this business case, blah, blah, blah. She's like, okay. She's making about $225,000 a year. All right, you know how long it takes to go through 12,000 emails and see if there's any reference to what? She says, I'm a very well-paid slave. But at the end of the day, she locked the drawer, went home. There is a lot of conversation about football coaches and any utterance about being overworked. When it comes to football coaches, like college head coaches, and this isn't true everywhere, but it's kind of true everywhere, because especially against the backdrop of what today's economy in America is, because I'm not kidding, folks. Like, you know the reason I was going to the drive-thru? I'll say this on the air. I've loved Waffle House my entire life. Dan, have you eaten at Waffle House lately?
It's been a minute. I'm keto right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It sucks. It's okay. I'll get back when the wait's there.
So I get the same thing at Waffle House half for years, and it was like $8.90-something. It was up. Now it's up to $12.50. Now it's up to $12.50, and there's $1.52 just charge that I don't know what it's for, but it's $1.52. And I was like, I can't pay $14 for bacon and eggs. So I'm going through the drive-thru, and at the drive-thru, would you like to tip? I'm like, I get it. It's like an assault. So against the backdrop of what prices are and everything else, like, quote, even Joe Moorhead. Dan, did he really Heisman Nick Saban? Is that the words?
I didn't hear that. That's interesting if he did.
Get us a Bama guest for today.
You're in luck. Bottom of hour two, Drew DeArmond.
Drew DeArmond's coming on. My understanding is Joe Moorhead was like, nah, good. There is a surprising factor about that with Joe Moorhead that we will talk a little bit about later that really surprises me if it's true about Moorhead and passing on the Alabama opportunity. There's an aspect about that I've talked about with Jim Donnan before. This is going to surprise me. But you don't hear coaches even whisper about being overworked. Can I tell you when they're screaming about it and we just don't really connect those dots or maybe take it that far? Or maybe we do. But it's their way of just screaming at the top of their lungs, but it's based around other things. It's justified with other things. When we are talking about college football head coaches, for many, and again, the backdrop of this entire conversation, economy, inflation, all that, I will say the more accurate phrasing is when you are compensated at a level that most of us can't even conceptualize. And it's not even, doesn't have to be Kirby Smart. Take the lowest paid coach over there. I don't know, Clark Lee, I'll say $3.5 million. What is that, $300,000 a month? When after taxes on the 15th and 30th, you get $81,000, I'm guessing, I don't know, $81,000 in the direct deposit. Do you know what I would do the first time I got that? I would be like looking online, hitting refresh, refresh, when it goes from pending to, oh, wow. And then it happens on the 30th, and then it happens the next month on the 15th, then it happens on the 30th again, and then suddenly you've been paid $81,000 take home on the 15th and 30th, and it has happened every 15th and 30th for the past 2 years. You know what that's called? You should be in a pretty good spot money-wise. A lot of people don't get there, but you should be. And he is the lowest paid dude in the entire conference when it comes to SEC football. Lowest paid, $81,000, I'm guessing, because they're private and they don't tell you. If you're Kirby Smart, help me with this. What is he getting about? If he's making $11 million a year, and that's not including driving a – where Georgia Tough. What is that truck? Is that a Ford?
Ford F-150.
He's Georgia Tough. All right, so not even including that, or Under Armour. Are they Under Armour or Nike or Reebok?
Nike.
Or,
Nike.
Fantastic. Nike, Dan, thank you. Get the sponsor right. Kirby gets broke off. And it's so much money, that's how you – he get broke off. I'm just talking about – $11 million a year from the university, which is what, about 900 and a little bit, 900,000 a month. So let's say he has a very good, you know, tax attorney and accountant and all that. And so after taxes, just his take home every 15 days, I don't know, 350,000. And then 15 days later, there's another 300 and something thousand. And then 15 days, you ain't got to have a lot of 15 days later. You don't have to have a lot of those. You don't have to have a lot of 15 days later for all that to add up. And Chuck, you're going to bang the drum to make life easier on these people? See, when we're the reason I'm saying all that is when you're talking about the salary of college football head coaches, it's at a gargantuan, unrealistic level. Most of us, I don't know. I would be boring. I would be spending my money on things like food and clothing. And then after a while, you look around and you realize, all right, I've got the car and I've got the golf club membership and I've got all this other stuff. And then I'll start a record label and lose all my money, maybe. I don't know. But I know that that's the reality. Like my 15th and 30th, and I got things to do with the money. And so I have full perspective that in some cases, I am arguing to make life easier on a group of guys where some of them take home $350,000 every 15 days and the F-150 money. You can be extremely unrealistic beyond monopoly well paid, and you can be overworked to an unreasonable degree that derails every non-work facet of your entire existence. And that's the truth. Even at the income level of Kirby Smart or Nick Saban or Brian Kelly or Clark Lee, even at that income level, you can be overworked to such an unreasonable degree that every other thing about your life, and it may be your wife, your kids, going to church, whatever it is, nutrition, every other part of it, to the wayside. I had Bobby Crimmins, who's a basketball coach. He said one time, he's like, you can be coach of the year, father of the year. Can't be both. Coach of the year, husband of the year. Can't be both. You can be even at that income level, because I got news for you, folks. There are rock stars make $75 million a year. And you know what they do? They paid 325 dates last year. Tico Torres, who I was a big Bon Jovi fan. Last couple of times I've seen him, it was a cash grab. But Tico Torres, good stick work, Bon Jovi. Really good drummer, quality. He talked about being on tour for 2 years and then recording a studio album and then immediately going back on tour for two more years. He got home to his mansion in New Jersey, and he said after about a week of not being able to sleep, he's like, I realized what the problem was. He called a general contractor, said, could you turn my bedroom into a Four Seasons suite? He says, that's the only environment that I had gotten comfortable sleeping in was a Four Seasons suite. And the guy's like, okay. He's like, here's some money. Go stay in a Four Seasons. Check in. Take all the measurements and photos you need and turn my bedroom in this house into a... He's like, Tico Torres made like $40 million that year. He was overworked to such a degree that he couldn't sleep anymore unless it was as if he were at work. Ugh. He called that out. He's like, yeah, that's weird. When we see coaches using that code language so they don't say, I'm overworked, give me a break, folks, because then somebody would say, Clark Lee, back in your hole. That's Clark Lee. When coaches use the code is, we really need to adjust the recruiting calendar. The code is, we really need to further funnel down on the transfer portal. The closest you heard to, when I say coaches were screaming about it, against the backdrop of preparing their team, because that's the real goal. And I give them credit. That's true. It really is. You had Kirby Smart saying, we're getting our team prepared for a playoff game at the exact same time that we are recruiting high school kids and kids from the portal, and our players are taking finals. Now, all of that was true, but do you know what his big, you know what the only real fudge is there? Kirby broke all that down into two categories of, because of this first thing, all of this other stuff is just too much. Do you know what the truth is? The inside the room of truth where you whisper it is for Kirby? His justification, we're trying to prepare a team. The real truth is all of that is in the one category together. Even preparing for the game when it comes to going to church, being a husband, being a father, doing any nutrition, taking care of yourself, thinking 1 second about anything other than football. Even preparing for the game, there's not actually two categories. Preparing for the game is just another detail, like recruiting high school kids, portal, etc. So I'll beat the drum for them. There need to be significant changes in all of those fronts. We're going to break, come back, talk college football next.
More college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Appreciate everybody coming on today. Coming here for your college football conversation. It's what we do. Nine states, 56 sticks. Thank y'all for that. The Bama OC job remains open, best of my knowledge. And there's a former SEC head coach that gets a point for maturity, because I'd have gone pinata on my former employer. If Joe Moorhead really did pass on the opportunity to be Bama OC, and thus the chance to, take it out on Mississippi State. He's a better man than me. That's a human thing, man. After all that went on with Joe Moorhead and his exit and the words back, the stuff he said when he was still employed there. And he's like, nah, I'm good here. I'm good being a head coach in the MAC. Jim Donnan told me he turned down the opportunity. Kentucky offered him like $1.5 million a year. This is 20 years ago. $1.5 million a year to be their head coach. He's like, I can't beat Georgia. He's like, I'm only going to go someplace I can beat Georgia. I was like, man, that's petty. And then I gave him a fist bump. I was like, right on, man. Want to welcome on right now somebody we're going to turn to, because when it comes to Bama OC talk, of course, we go to Irish Illustrated from the aforementioned IrishIllustrated.com. It is Tim O'Malley. Tim, welcome aboard. You're our Bama expert for Hour 1. How are you?
Hey, it happens, but I guess if Tommy Reese is petty, he has a shot to get back at his old employer, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I'm like, I always check the box. Good for you being mature, but I'm a kind of a college football guy. I want to, take a swing up, poke somebody in the eye a little bit. Let's get serious here. Tommy Reese, how thrilled is the Notre Dame fan base and head coach and everybody with Tommy Reese? Let's set those waters. Like, what is the Tommy Reese vibe in South Bend if it's a week ago when none of this has ever been talked about?
Yeah, I tell you, we've been talking at Irish Illustrated about how much other people want Reese. For instance, the Rams were supposedly interested if they could get Tommy Reese in last year. He flirted. Obviously, Brian Kelly wanted him at LSU. We were told that Tommy Reese once already talked to Nick Saban back in the day after his first year as coordinator just to become a quarterback's coach. Notre Dame fans are much more happy to see Tommy Reese leave, I think, than any analyst that kind of looks at what
he
does.
I've been shocked.
I think analysts from the NFL and people that really know offense think Tommy Reese has innovative times. And the number one thing I will say that Reese will do, he is going to adapt to the talent around him. When people say, well, Notre Dame is stuck in the Stone Age offensively, if your offensive line was your best unit, Michael Mayer, a tight end, was by far your best player. Your running backs were your next best players. And clearly your worst players were your quarterbacks and wide receivers. What offense do you want to run? I would have run what Tommy Reese ran as well. When he goes to Alabama, he's going to have a lot more talent on hand. Now, Notre Dame detractors, the fans that don't like Tommy Reese, will rightfully say, well, whose fault is that they didn't have those quarterbacks and wide receivers? You can definitely put that on Tommy Reese as a third-year offensive coordinator going to his fourth year. So I think when the players are there, he's going to look very good offensively. And usually, I know Alabama has a quarterback competition coming up. I have a feeling those guys are decent.
Okay, so now we turn to the Tuscaloosa view of things, because I said I was shocked. That's not I'm always like, I got a cocked eyebrow when I look at a fan base. I'm going to go, it's hard to separate emotionally. I know that. Let's talk about from the Tuscaloosa viewpoint. Why do you think he may be of interest to Nick Saban? And is this more than just footsie?
I think it'll be announced today, honestly. I think it's more than footsie. I do know that Reese, despite what I said, that he will adapt to everything. And if his five best players are quarterback and four wide receivers, you're going to see that. He does have a little old school in him in that he believes the running game has to emerge during every single contest. I don't think he is so old school to think the run has to set up the pass, but he will definitely lean on the running game when you have a good offensive line and good running backs. I still think that makes sense as well. So I assume Alabama fans are going to like that. We look for tendencies in Tommy Rees, largely because our message board and fan base kept saying, why do we always have to run on second long? So I checked every single second long for 2 years, and there were zero tendencies from Tommy Rees, other than he ran a little bit more on second and seven than he passed. I don't think that's a tendency people are easily exploiting in college football games. I think he does a very good job of mixing things up. I think he's a really good play caller. I don't know about quarterback development because, you know, he had Ian Book, but Chip Long was there with him. Ian Book arguably was just as good the year he lost to Clemson going undefeated there to go to the playoff as he was when he left Notre Dame, when they were in the Camping World Bowl. He had Jack Cohn kind of came in as a bit of a finished product. Now, Jack Cohn got better at Notre Dame, that's for sure. He had a good year. They kind of wanted to run a little bit of different offense that Jack Cohn was capable of doing because he was very immobile, but he's a heck of a passer. And I don't know what to say about last year because they did lose Tyler Buchner in game number 1.5, and Drew Pine, who's a limited guy, went 8-2. Now, if you want to say, again, well, Tyler Buchner and Drew Pine were recruited and developed by Tommy Rees, that is also fair. I'm just saying I believe he will have better access to talent at Alabama. In no way am I saying it's a home run hire. I'm just saying I get where people are coming from, that they're always courting Tommy Rees.
All right, so another trip, because he was there yesterday, another trip to Tuscaloosa by an OC, and this time he didn't go back to UW or somewhere else and pass on the job. Tommy, because he was there yesterday, and so apparently he's going to take the job, and that's what it's going to be. Last thing for you, we got like 30 seconds. Where does Marcus Freeman go? What's the move there?
Yeah, I assume he is going to go outside the staff. They brought on Jared Parker, who's a former offensive coordinator at West Virginia, but he's a tight ends coach. I think he's going to stay as a tight ends coach. I think Freeman, when I say swing big, I don't mean you have to have a big name. I'm saying I think he's going to look for an offensive coordinator from outside the family right now and try to augment that room. It would be myopic for me to say that you cannot replace Tommy Rees. I absolutely think you can replace Tommy Rees. Yep. I just think that he is vastly underrated for how he sets up defenses with his schemes, and I think it could end up showing where he has Alabama's talent. Mm-hmm. And just like everybody else at Alabama, he's a short-timer, and his next job is the NFL.
IrishIllustrated.com, Tim O'Malley. We break. Head to the rest of the hour next.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. Started before the 2014 season, so I appreciate everybody making this blessing possible. Sam Pittman, he answered about as important a question as you can have, other than who's on the roster. It's who's calling the plays. And because of the context involved with him losing his OC to a lateral move, but it's not that an SEC team lost its offensive coordinator to somebody else. It's, no, there's a lot of backstory. You can get back to Texas and, now chance to face all that music. Well, Arkansas responded in a pretty dang strong way. They have a new OC themselves. And I'm a big, big – Dan Enos has a reputation of having some hard bark on him. He is not a warm, fuzzy guy. I don't care about that. I said, you're not hiring a best friend. And I like him as a quarterback coach, as a play caller, et cetera. So I think it's a strong hire. But It's always about what do the fans think right now, because on February 3rd, they got opinions. And who's calling the shots offensively is about the top of that list. Want to welcome on right now, guy that we turn to quite a bit. Occasionally, you can see him on Pig Trail Nation, who we have those folks on all the time. That's like the state conglomerate of the NBC affiliates, I believe. But, of course, he's co-host of The Morning Rush, and we visit with each other at Media Days every year. It is Ty Richardson. Ty, how you doing, brother?
Chuck, I'm good. I asked Dan a stupid question last night, asked him if we were still talking college football. I learned my lesson and happy to be on with you this morning.
Oh, yeah, it's year-round, you know, today just like yesterday, just like 3 months from now. So let's talk about the new OC hire. I like Dan Enos, and he was a guy that originally got headlines when it was, hey, it's better to be an OC in the Southeastern Conference than a head coach in the MAC, which it can be. But he's back now as quarterback coach and OC, and I like the hire. What do you think? What has been the response from fans? How do you think it's going to play out on the field?
Brandon Allen was played like an all-SEC quarterback when Dan Enos was here in 2015. He's got the Jalen Hurts connection. He's got the Talia Tungavailoa connection. And I think most Arkansas fans are happy. You could have done better, per se. You could have done worse, per se. But he's got the reputation with quarterbacks. He likened KJ Jefferson to Jalen Hurts, the guy that's playing for Super Bowl right now. So if he sees similarities between Hurts and Jefferson, I'm hoping he can pull out the full potential of KJ.
All right, you mentioned KJ Jefferson, who I think everybody has seen that kid. That's a whole lot of quarterback to try to get down on the grass. He's the starter, and he's going to be the starter, and he may be the best. He may be the most productive quarterback in the entire SEC West, maybe the conference. That's how good he can be. This is the weirdness of what portal life brings to me. I've never been more interested in what the second and third spot on the QB depth chart looks like, especially when everybody knows who the starter is. Tell me about Arkansas 2 and 3 at the quarter. What's that going to wind up looking like, do you think, after spring practice?
Well, they got a young man from your neck of the woods, Malachi Singleton, down there in Georgia, and he's a guy that played through some injuries this past high school season, a guy that Kendall Browse recruited but ultimately signed with Arkansas, so they're really excited. Jacoby Criswell is the transfer from North Carolina that was from Arkansas, went to Morrilton High School, was the highest quarterback rank in his class, but they were going for Chandler Morris when Chad was here at the time. So that's who's behind him in addition to Cade Forden. They've definitely added some pieces they like. I really like the toughness of Malachi Singleton, but I'm going to be honest, Chuck. I hope we don't have to see him unless they're blowing someone out, because I hope KJ has a healthy year.
Let's talk about sort of bringing some buoyancy, some stabilizing to the wide receiver core, and you can work tight ends in there and guys you flex out if you want to talk running backs, like guys in the pattern. Because whether it's been to the NFL or like South Carolina, there's been a lot of talent that's left Fayetteville.
Yeah, you lose Jaden Hazelwood. You lose Matt Lanners, a former Georgia wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Trey Knox, Warren Thompson quit on the team earlier in the season. So that's a lot of guys right there. And Arkansas's hoping that a young man, Isaiah Cetania, who's literally not even half a mile at Fayetteville High School, shows up in the sophomore season. They brought in this kid named Isaac Tesla, who's highly recruited by even some other SEC schools out of Hillsdale College in Michigan. You've got a couple other tall guys. They brought in the tallest wide receiver commit out of the portal at 6'7". I think it's Tyrese Broden, if I remember that right. The thing, Chuck, it's one thing to put up numbers at D2 and non-Power 5 schools. It's another thing to go up against an SEC cornerback every single time. I'm looking at Keely Ringo in the national championship game, and I was like, this guy looks like a linebacker playing corner. It's just a different level in the Southeastern Conference.
All right. Let's talk about the new defensive coordinator, because obviously Travis Williams is a guy, when he was on the field, man, he could fly. And he has had a lot of success so far, a lot of great reviews for his coaching. And now it's really all on him on defense in the SEC. Go get you some. What's your general feel about how that's going to go?
He's a linebacker guy. He's produced when he's coached that position and then had a decent defense under Gus Malzahn at UCF. And Arkansas just can't be as bad the passing game as last year, Chuck. I think they were 120th in all of college football in pass defense, and he brought in one of his former colleagues, Marcus Woodson, and Sam Pittman obviously had something to do with that. That one-time coach at Auburn to be his passing game coordinator. They've got to figure that out. And if he can, he brought in a guy from USF, Greer, who Arkansas fans are really excited about. Now, they lost Bumper Pool. They lost Drew Sanders, two mainstays here for this program last year. Yep. So it's still a wishy-washy point, definitely more than the offense, Chuck.
You mentioned that secondary, and I knew some of the names, and a couple of them I was really excited about, from even from the SEC West that had transferred in last year, and then an injury, like literally the best players out like week two, and then another injury, and just it was bad, and then it just went even worse. So Sam Pittman has made it a priority. I think, did I see there'll be six freshman defensive backs? That's something, but it's also the SEC, and so putting a bunch of freshmen running around the secondary is not always the best thing. Tell me how you think the secondary can be better, because it was awful.
I think there's nowhere to go from up but up. Now, their highest-ranked player is a kid named Jalen Braxton from Frisco High School in Texas. That's going to be the guy that I think is going to see immediate playing time in year one. Can't say about the other freshmen because, like you said, there's an adjustment period. And now you're going to remember this name, Lorando Snacks Johnson, coming over from Baylor. Definitely going to have one of the best nicknames in all of college football. They've got one of his teammates, Walcott, I think is his name as well. So they've definitely added some pieces. I think they added, if I remember correctly, Chuck, 17 commits on defense and 13 on offense. So they definitely made it more of it a priority this year.
Wrapping up, Ty Richardson, y'all know him. We have him on sort of the regular. And specifically, I mentioned some of the names I liked. Dwight McLaughlin, I had somebody, when he was just practicing at LSU, somebody down there in Baton Rouge and said, like, he might be the next one. And, like, somebody, LSU talks about a defensive back and, like, even references that. You're like, okay, I'll watch. He was okay last year, I guess. What is the role for him? What's the blue sky? What can he be?
He's the leader in picks last season. I'm hoping that he takes that next step. I don't know if he's ever going to be a Patrick Peterson, if we're likening him to an LSU cornerback or Matthew or one of those guys that just changed the game. Yeah. But he can be a lockdown corner. He can play in the National Football League at some point. He's a bigger guy. I think he's 6'2", and looks more like a wide receiver than a corner. But his thing, Chuck, he's got to stop biting on fakes. He's aggressive, kind of like Trevion Diggs for the Cowboys. Like, you're either going to get an interception or he's going to get beat. And that was kind of his thing last year. Hopefully he can be more consistent in that area.
Last thing, let's talk a little bit about the fans. Am I correct? I'm just trying to remember. I could look this up and take 2 seconds. But the game in Dallas, is that thing done?
It is done after the 2024 season. So you got two more years of it. I sat and watched Cam Little's field goal last year and wanted to jump out of Jerry's press box. That was painful, dude.
Is there, like, I haven't heard anybody. I kind of like neutral site environments, and so I brought that up to a Texas A&M person several years ago, and he's like, no, it's horrible. Everybody hates it. I was like, really? He says, everybody but Jerry. What is the general idea about that? Because you had a little bit of glee. Nope, check two more and then done.
Yeah, so initially when it started in 2009, the teams weren't both in the SEC. Then A&M joined. They put the renovations to Kyle Field, and Bjork's been very open that they want this thing back home at home, which is going to happen. I mean, Jerry Jones loved it. Arkansas fans loved it when they were winning. Then they started losing every year, and it would suck going to Dallas and making the trek down there. But I don't anticipate, Chuck, with the rearranging of the SEC schedule, that they will have a neutral site game in Dallas moving forward. This could be a once-every-5-year thing. But I've had some great memories there, even though there's been a lot more heartbreak than there has been happiness.
And the game in Little Rock.
I'm a Little Rock guy, and you just heard that. Yeah, that's happening in 2025 with Arkansas State. First time these two programs have ever met on the football field. I don't see a scenario where that continues. Now, they might have the spring game, but here's the deal, Chuck. Follow the money. A lot of money, a lot of donors in Little Rock. That's where the hangup is, I think, for some people, is they don't want to frustrate those down there because there's a lot of money that comes out of Central Arkansas to Northwest Arkansas.
I've got a female acquaintance of mine in the media industry. She's from Arkansas, and she's like, Chuck, the state approved funds for an interstate basically just so you could get to football games. And she said, when you talk like old money in the Capitol, she's like, there's nowhere like Arkansas. Now, I've heard like people from five different states where, no, it's different in our state. She's like, in Arkansas, the old people in the Capitol, they really run things. And so it's just, it's kind of the old folks in the under the dome, isn't it?
Yeah. See, you got old money in central Arkansas, more new money in northwest Arkansas. Not that there isn't a bit of both in either side, but and the river valleys where I'm at, which is also a combination. So I would say that central Arkansas and northwest Arkansas are definitely where the money comes from. That's where they hide in the banana stand there, Chuck.
Appreciate you as always, Ty. Have a great day, man.
Hey, have a good weekend. Thanks, Chuck. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Ty Richardson, again, always appreciate him coming on. Guy who, again, Pig Trail Nation is all of the NBC affiliates, and he contributes there, but then also co-host of The Morning Rush every 6 to 9, every morning 6 to 9, Monday through Friday, there in Fayetteville. Yeah, they built a highway in Arkansas to basically open up traffic. So all roads lead to football. And so it's... They said there's no state like it, which, again, I've had people in Georgia where I live, and I've even thought of before, oh, my gosh, nobody else would do that. And then people in Alabama is like, hold my beer. So Mississippi, Louisiana, you see it. Nobody's like us, but you kind of are. And so you heard the disgust, the puh, from Ty, who's from Little Rock. And so the old stadium, is it still called War Memorial? The old stadium in Little Rock, which is just not a really it's not a venue for an SEC team, not today, but there is a game there that they had promised one every year, and it was a conference game, but then it would be the worst conference game, and then it could be any game, and then it's like, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore, and it's like, all right, we owe you one more, we'll give you one more, what, and so it's just, I don't know who it's popular with, anybody younger than age 70. That's what I've been told. So, maybe my friend was right. Leslie Court, we've had her on before. Maybe she was right. It's like, nowhere will you find. And so, her version, maybe she's right. Maybe she doesn't know what she's talking about. Maybe Arkansas, when talking about that state legislature, maybe that they get the belt and then we all line up second. But it's just, it is an outlier that used to be so common to almost every if we look at what we call the major conferences today, because there used to be a conference like the, I don't know, Wichita State was in a football conference. If you look at what we call the Power Five today, so many of those schools previously had neutral site contests, and in a couple of cases, plural. There'd be major football games in Montgomery, Alabama, and not involving the local team. It would be in Columbus, Georgia. Jackson, Mississippi, my gosh, why would you play anywhere else? Of course we're going to play in Jackson. That's where the big stadium is. And so that's why, like, Little Rock? That's why you play in Little Rock, because that's where the big stadium was a long time ago. And it's just not true anymore. I've told you, most stuff, how do you know that? I'm like, I don't know. I heard it at some point. I can tell you, I think when this happened, Alabama lost to Southern Miss in Bear Bryant's final season. I think it was 82, and they lost, maybe it was 81, maybe it was the second last season, but it was their first home loss in like 10 years. And I was like, well, I knew Alabama was great, but first home loss first on-campus loss. I was like, wait a minute. They play Auburn in Birmingham. And then I was thinking, no, artificial grass. When they play Tennessee, that's always artificial. When I see them play, it's artificial. When I see them play, hey, wait a minute. All of their big games, they didn't play anybody in Tuscaloosa. Do you know why? Because any game of note, well, let's play it in the big stadium. We'll play it at Legion Field. All of their big games. So, of course, they didn't lose anything on campus for 10 years until I think it was Reggie Collier. And Southern Miss came in and beat them. Now, their record at Legion Field, here's the impressive part. That's pretty dang good. And even more impressive because it was only Auburn, Georgia, Tennessee, LSU, all the big opponents, Southern Cal, Nebraska. Big game? Well, we can't play on campus. Let's go to – you'd never do that unless you're Arkansas. You'll do that. Game in Little Rock. Ugh. You heard it. I don't know how you spell that, but Ty, quote him. Ugh. Little Rock, and he's from there. He gets to stay home. He gets to save whatever, you know, travel cost or what. He's like, no, give me the game up at Purdue Stadium. All right, we're going to take a break. We will come back and continue next.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
If I really do what I've done in the past and spend all of my time game planning, preparing to call a game only, I'm not sure that's best for Auburn.
You freeze. Talking about not giving up the play calling duties. He was talking to the media yesterday, and he has an offensive coordinator of pretty good repute, Phil Montgomery. Chuck's opinion. Oh, Auburn's going to throw the ball. And all right, now back into maybe some more factual stuff here. So Phil Montgomery is the OC, and by everyone's same version, he'll have the vast majority of the play calling. But Hugh Freeze has said, when we start going, you know, giddy up, boogie ball, when Auburn starts boogie ball, then he said, I have, you know, I've got so much with that, and it really is my all. So anybody can call this on this offensive sideline. He even mentioned, you know, a name, Ken Austin. Anybody, Auburn fans on, or maybe Ole Miss? Show of hands, who knows who Ken Austin is? He got history in the league. And you won't find, he's an analyst there. But he says, when we start with the hurry up, he says, maybe I'll jump in and kind of take over and get on a roll maybe. He says, but, and he's right about this part. He says, there's a lot to do. And to also call plays, there's almost like a head coach really, really, really is the play caller. There's almost a tax on that. Do you know how when you become a head coach, they immediately start to limit? In some ways, there are caps on, you know, recruiting. It's the same sort of thing. When you are a head coach and you really are in charge of calling plays, there's almost a tax of a timeout per half. Or a delay a game per half when the quarterback, you get like a 19-year-old kid looking at a 15-year head coach going, with his hands going, you gave me the play at 6. And by the way, the 19-year-old is right because the head coach trying to do two juggling chainsaws. And you got a 19-year-old going, I hit the play 5 yards. And I don't know, insult? The official said, delay a game, number 9. He was like, I was asking him. Dan, how's your Friday?
So far, so good. And it's pretty good to be the head coach at South Carolina right now, Shane Beamer. I mean, it didn't start off all that well during the offseason when he chided the media and others about Dow Loggins and going out of his way to say, no, Dow's our guy. And he's a great coach, and we're really going to enjoy having him here. I guess time will tell if indeed that is the case. But, of course, the coup of the week was him getting Nicholas Harbor to say yes to South Carolina, because you're thinking to yourself, you're a 5-star. Why are you saying yes to Columbia, South Carolina? I think more than anything, it's selling the belief in what South Carolina is. Me and you and most of us who follow college football remember what South Carolina was from 2010 to 2014. It was rocking. Williams-Brice Stadium, especially a night game, was a place as an opponent you did not want to be. And seemingly at the end of last season, I think that Shane Beamer was kind of able to recapture that magic yet again. Once they were winning it during that time period in the early 2010s, there were a lot of people looking at him and saying, hey, act like you've been there before. Steve Spurrier included was looking at everybody and saying, we haven't been here before, so I don't really know what you're talking about. And now Shane Beamer, who was part of that, is trying to recapture that again. And getting a guy like Nicholas Harbor to say yes
if he has immediate success, that immediately opens the door to others of his ilk, the five-star variety, high four stars, that will say yes to South Carolina and immediately start to believe, hey, facilities, they're pretty good here. The football, it's pretty good here as well. The campus, yeah, pretty cool as well. I do want to say yes to Columbia, South Carolina over upstate South Carolina, Athens, or anywhere else that they might.
Number one word that you want to start hearing from a South Carolina fan or a media person that is and. That three-year period with Spurrier and this 3 years with Beamer. They don't have an and for almost anything. They played in the SEC title game in 2010. And 2024 or three or something. There's no ands. George Rogers, they need an and.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hey, sandwich lovers. Today's your lucky day. There's a whole new way to roll for lunch or dinner delight with Nucky's Hoagies in the Roswell Corners Shopping Center. Now open. Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell is family-owned and operated by the sub-sisters, Stacy and Shannon, whose love language is food and Nucky's Hoagies, their passion. When you bite into a Nucky's Hoagie, you'll taste the difference. The softest hoagie rolls ever, along with hunger-quenching sandwich combinations. Make Nucky's Hoagies in Roswell on Woodstock Road your new favorite spot for lunch or dinner.